So I'll start off today. Is anyone in here ready for the Feast of Tabernacles? Anybody ready for that? No, I don't mean excited about it. I mean, are you ready for it? Are you packed up? Do you have all your stuff together? Yeah. The hands go down. Now, the Masseys are leaving early this year, earlier than I think we've ever left before. We're going to leave Monday night. Now, how many people here think that the Masseys are ready to go? Yeah. No hands, just laughs. You know, the always be prepared ahead of time. That's the Massey family motto. What I really want to ask you today is, are you mentally ready for the Feast of Tabernacles? Now, do you have a mindset going into these days that is aligned with how God would want you to walk into the days ahead? And maybe like me, you're waiting till the last minute. And so today what I want to do is I want to get you pumped and excited, but really, even more importantly, give you three nuggets, three mindsets that I want and I believe God would want each of you to have going into this feast. Now, you could pick 10. I just picked three. And no doubt, when you get there, most of you are going, many of you are going, if not most of you, you will hear about these three things at the feast. These aren't things that are things you won't hear about. But I think they're things that are important to get in your mind and in front of your eyes before you go. So, my purpose today is to encourage you to take these three mindsets, put them on you as you walk out the door today. I'll tell you what they are ahead of time, and then we'll go through them. The first one is, I want you to have a mindset of harvest. A mindset of harvest. Look at your harvest and use looking at your harvest as a means to propel you to rejoice. We'll talk about that. That's kind of the first one. Look at the harvest. Two, when you go to the feast, recognize that it is a spiritual model of the kingdom of God. That's what it is. And that what God is building in his kingdom is a family, and a family is a family of people that are joined as a spiritual family. So the second one is recognizing what the Feast of Tabernacles really is, which is a spiritual model of the kingdom, a family. And the third thing, third mindset, is to go in recognizing that you are a sojourner, and that this is a sojourner's festival. It's where you belong. So those are the three mindsets. Harvest, spiritual model, family, sojourner. And with those three mindsets as front lights before your eyes, again, my purpose today is to get you energized to meditate on these in the days leading up to the feast so that you can go into it with a heart ready to learn, ready to rejoice, and really ready to change your life. So first, let's take a look at this mindset of harvest. Turn to Deuteronomy 16, and undoubtedly you'll turn to this multiple times, but there's many aspects to this festival, this set of holy days that we're headed into here a little over a week. Deuteronomy 16, and I'll just read verses 13 through 15. Celebrate the Festival of Tabernacles for 7 days after you've gathered the produce of your threshing floor and your winepress. It's the Festival of Tabernacles. It's the Feast of Booths. It's the Feast of Ingathering. After you've gathered the produce of your threshing floor and your winepress. This is the harvest in an agriculture society. This was what they had worked on all year, worked hard for. Brought it in, and then take that and be joyful at your festival. You, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, the Levites, the foreigners or sojourners, the fatherless and the widows who live in your towns, everybody, for 7 days celebrate the festival of the Lord your God at the place he chooses, for the Lord your God will bless you in all your harvest and in all the work of your hands. And your joy will be complete. You'll hear a lot about rejoicing. Rejoicing with the harvest that you have. Exodus 23 calls it the Feast of Ingathering. And now we know that the meaning, and we'll talk a lot about this, that the Feast of Tabernacles at its core is picturing this great harvest, you know, a spiritual harvest to come when God establishes his kingdom for all mankind. And that's great, and we'll celebrate that. But the mindset I want you to go in with this feast is a little more on the individual level. And it's a mindset of your personal harvest. Reflect on this past year. And think about what God has blessed you with. You know, physically, in your life, and spiritually. I mean, a year goes by like that. A lot's gone on. Maybe it's not all good. Maybe it's not all blessing. But no doubt, there are things that are tremendous blessings that it takes a moment to pause and look at your harvest. We're not an agricultural society anymore. Some of us kind of try to be, but we're not an agricultural society. It was easy for the Israelites to look at their harvest and see what God had blessed them with. But for us, sometimes I just don't think we do that, heading into the festival of harvest. So do that. Look at your harvest. And then as you go to the feast, eat that harvest daily. Because just like we read in Deuteronomy 16, if you do that, it will lead to being thankful and grateful, which will lead to, as it ends the verses we read in Deuteronomy, to be joyful and to rejoice. So here is an action item for every person in this room. As you start to get ready, start to thinking about what you're going to pack up and what you're going to take and what you need to do beforehand. You probably said, Ben, you give me this like once a year. Make a list of your harvest this past year. Make a list of it. Write it down. What are your blessings? What is the harvest that God has given you? What is your personal harvest? You know, far too often in our society, we just act, and I'll throw myself in this, we just act sometimes like we're spoiled brats. You know, we have this false sense as a society of entitlement. And you know, this entirely, completely unbiblical idea that God owes us ease and luxury, or at least the chance to go for 2 weeks without having to deal with, you know, any particular problem. But God doesn't owe us any of that stuff. You know, he made us. We owe him everything. So take this moment to go in and be thankful for your list of harvest blessings. Yes, I'm asking every one of you to make a list of them. Write them down. Because you need that to take stock of it. The Israelites had their stock of their harvest. They had it packed on their wagons or whatever they took. They could see it, they could touch it, they could smell it, they could feel it. We maybe lose some of that in this day and time. But God has blessed us with so much in this past year. So write it down. Write down the list of things that he's given to you. You know, thank him for, write down just, I'm thankful for life. I'm here another year. And for the people he surrounded you with, for the good things you have, for his love, for his son. Like the message we heard earlier, for the gift that we have assured before us, if we walk in that way. For the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, for his kingdom, for his spirit, for redemption, for peace and safety and freedom, which we often take for granted. But if you start writing it down, you're going to find that the list will go on and on. And take that list. Look at it before you go. Write it before you go. Look at it before you go. But then when you get to the feast, take it out. Meditate on it as you go through. Eat of your harvest. Now you will find that as you do this, you'll notice there's more things to be appreciative of. And there's really more that you've been given in your harvest than you probably recognized before. Because while you do, each of us have our troubles. And they're on a whole, you know, scale that goes on from for a lot of us. But when you start to look at your blessings, you know, your good guys, your wins, what you'll start to notice is there's a lot more that we've been blessed with in this last year than there is than we have to worry about. And that will bring joy. All right, two more actions with that list that I gave you. First, when you look at your harvest list, I can almost guarantee you that on that list will be people. Maybe it's your family, maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a child. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's somebody that's did something for you this past year that just intersected your life at a moment. But there'll be people on that list. People who God has blessed you with in this past year that is part of your harvest. You know, we often fail to appreciate those people. And how many times have, you know, somebody has left your life for whatever reason? They passed on or moved away or you just lost touch with them. And you really wish that you would have let them know how much that, you know, whatever it is they did that you appreciated for the difference they made in your life. And you just don't take the opportunity to do that. Here's the strange twist that goes back to rejoicing. Strange twist to God and how he made us. That being appreciative to others actually makes us happy. You know, I think I mentioned this in another message, but there was a study that was done on gratitude and you know, how it correlates to happiness. And they performed a simple experiment, and this was across dozens of people. Each person came in, they filled out this detailed questionnaire about, you know, their outlook on life, you know, that kind of assessed how happy they were. And then they asked each person to write down one paragraph about someone who had a great impact on their life and what it was that they appreciated about them. Now, much to their surprise, each subject wasn't enough. That was just part of it. So they'd taken this, they measured their happiness, they asked them to write a paragraph about somebody they appreciated. And then they told the people as part of this survey or study that they needed to go and call the person that they'd written this paragraph about and read it to them. Again, the strange thing here is the results were amazing. For those who wrote the paragraph, they retook the Outlook on Life survey, I guess, with different questions. For those who wrote a paragraph about somebody that they appreciated, but then they couldn't reach them and tell them, their happiness improved 4%. Yeah, so it improved. Not bad. But for those who did reach the person and read it to them, their happiness increased 20%. 20%. You know, too often we make the mistake to just not take a few seconds or a few minutes to take the people that are on your harvest list and just let them know that you appreciate them. So your first action is, when you write that list, take two people and just tell them that you appreciate them. And I guarantee that will lead you into the Feast of Tabernacles with a heart to rejoice. Now your second action is the same list. You're going to have things on there, and I already mentioned some of them, that you're appreciative, all of them really, to God. Take that list and put them in your prayers. If you can, up until the feast, but really when you get there. Again, you want to eat of that harvest. The symbolism of that is God's blessing that you're going to partake of, that you're going to enjoy, and that you're going to rejoice. And again, I absolutely guarantee you, that if you do those two actions ahead of this feast, you will walk into it with a heart absolutely bursting and ready to rejoice. Which when we go back and look at what we were told to do, that's what we're told to do. So that's the first mindset. You got to have a harvest mindset, which means you got three actions. List, tell somebody on the list, two people, tell God. Eat your harvest. That leads to the second mindset that I ask you to have going into this Feast of Tabernacles. I don't ask you, God asks you to have. But I think it'll be helpful. And I'm going to lead you here by asking you the question. Most of you have been to a Feast of Tabernacles before, and if you haven't, then listen to this because I think that this is something here that maybe will encourage you to go. But I'm asking you each individually, what was your best feast ever? And what made it your best feast ever? If you were to write down what your best feast was and what it made it that way, what would it be? Some people can just pop out and say that right away because they just it's just right there. Maybe you have to think about it. Now, if I did this and collected it all, and I kind of added it all up and said, like, you know, what made it? What left such an impact on you? You know, I would guess that there'd be things like it was maybe a year that you went to a place you'd always, a bucket list place. Or maybe you had the best food, or it was just the things you saw were amazing. Maybe. My guess is that's probably pretty low down the list. But maybe it was a year that the messages moved you, you were inspired. Or the truth of God just hit you right between the eyes. Or a time you connected with God like maybe never before. Yeah, that would probably be in the top two. Or maybe it was a year that you met special people, or your whole family was there, or you made new friends. Or there was something just remarkable about the harmony of the brethren and atmosphere. You know, the sense of true spiritual community that everybody really longs for. You know, when I net it down, I bet 90% of it would fall in one of those three categories. Either physical aspect, you know, your relationship with God, or your relationship with other people. And all three of those are exactly what you're going to do. They're all good. They're all right. Again, if I analyze them, I would bet, actually, that the number one, and maybe you'd be embarrassed that this would be number one, but I bet the number one mark would be the people that you surrounded you with at Feast of Tabernacles. That would be my guess. Your relationships with people. So why is that? Why would that be? Why does that leave such a lasting impression on us? So that we can just remember it and recite it later. Why is that? Is that wrong? I don't think so. Because I think God always intended for this feast to be a model of the harmony and relationships of his people as a spiritual community. You know, it is a model of the millennium in his eternal kingdom. And it's a model that you can talk about all day long, but you won't really get it unless you go and experience it. And it's a model that every single person, when they're there, should take it and internalize it and then take it back. And as I said earlier, change your life with it. You know, what we just read in Deuteronomy 16 and 13 through 14, and it doesn't just say go and take your wife and your kids and your brother or your mother. And it just notice how in Deuteronomy 16 it expands. It's the whole community. Take your servants, take the sojourners, the strangers. Take them all and celebrate and be joyful and enjoy your harvest. And in ancient Israel, the Feast of Tabernacles, it was just some of the monumental spiritual high points of the people of Israel coming together as one. It is the highlights of that civilization. You see it, you could read when Solomon dedicates the temple at the Feast of Tabernacles. It was probably the pinnacle of that nation. And then when in Ezra and Nehemiah, the Feast of Tabernacles, central to the spiritual high point, it was the one time that the nation came together as one to celebrate with the great blessings that God had given them. You know, individually and as a nation, they prayed together, they worshiped together, they sacrificed together, they made music together. And they lived together in the holy city as a reminder of their shared heritage and future. God commanded them to rejoice together as a nation family in ways that surely bonded them together as a people more than anything else that they did. You might say, well, I don't know about that. But if you go back, and I'm not going to actually ask you to turn there, but you can write it down. 1 Kings 12. 1 Kings 12 and 23 through 33. I'm going to tell you what it is. You don't have to turn there, but you can write it down. 1 Kings 12 and verses 23 to 33. And maybe you've never even read this before. Maybe you didn't know this. Maybe you don't know a little about Israel's history. But at this time, Jeroboam had just divided off Israel from Judah. Rehoboam had, you know, raised the taxes. He hadn't taken good advice. And Israel had separated off. Judah and Israel became two different nations. Jeroboam was leading Israel. And you know what he did as one of his, like, at least the first acts that we get recorded to divide the nation? What did he do? What tool did he use? Again, 1 Kings 12 and 23 through 33. It shows us that he set up an alternate Feast of Tabernacles in Israel. For convenience. Maybe. But that's not really what it says. It says that he did it because he was worried, in verse 27, about the hearts of the people. The hearts of the people, the emotions, the bonds, the memories, the sense of community, the sense of family, the sense of harmony as a nation, perhaps. The hearts would turn back to Judah. You know, Israel had just broken off, but Jeroboam knew, he knew that the power of the experience of that annual festival had the power to completely reverse course, to heal the divide, and to reunite the kingdom. And he didn't want that to happen. Now, we know that the feast is a model of the millennial kingdom to come. And we know that it will be a time of peace and of harmony. A time of people coming together with a sense of spiritual community like never before. You know, Zechariah 14, which we'll read, speaks of all the families of the earth coming up to worship God in unison together. But we know that. But knowing it is not enough. That's why this mindset, I want you to go into the Feast of Tabernacles with this mindset. Because what we experience at that feast is not something you can just read about and get. It's not just knowledge. And that's why God commands us to come together and live the model of his kingdom for 8 days. And we humans, which are complete relationship creatures, we come away deeply affected by tasting that sense of community and harmony and togetherness and bonds with our fellow brothers. You know, we all live in this world that's increasingly, it just denies the spiritual. All that there is physical. And I know I've talked about this before. That's what our education system teaches. It is what society emphasizes over and over. And it's the premise of science to measure what can be found, which is almost entirely through our physical senses. You know, even if it's neurology, studying electrical impulses in your brain, or electron scanning, tunneling, and atomic force microscopes to view individual DNA molecules, it's all physical. All of it. And while impressed on the issue, you know, most agnostics or humanists, maybe even atheists, will admit that there is some spiritual power or world. They'll deny its actual power, or just completely ignore the ramifications of that in its existence. But here's the question I have. What is a relationship? Can you see it? Can you touch it? Can you feel it with your hands, or smell it, or taste it? Can you study it under a microscope? The bond between, you know, a mom and her son, or a father and her daughter, or his daughter, or brothers or sisters, or best friends. What is that? You know, if they're not physically together, does that mean there's no bond? Is that what science would say? You know, is it physical or is it something else? When someone close to you, a father, a spouse, or best friend passes away, you know, and they're physically no longer there, does that bond just disappear? Or does it endure? I mean, you tell me, what is a relationship? I posit the human relationships are spiritual world existence 101. And every single human who has ever lived has experienced it. And the Bible has everything to say about it. That's what it's all about. And when you really look and study the book, you know, shivers start to go down your back because you realize that, you know, everything in the book is a 3D picture of this entire other realm. You know, a spiritual world, not a physical world. And the human spirit can be joined with the very spirit of God. And relationships with each other in this human life, they are just a model of the connection that God wants us to have in his eternal family. And if you go back and look at the early church, we see something we all desire. You know, in this day and age, we just wish we had what they had in Acts, beginning of Acts. And I'm not going to go through it, but it's actually a really good thing to read during the Feast of Tabernacles, not just Pentecost. You know, Acts 2 through 6, the glory days of the church. You know, I'll just read a little bit of Acts 2 and 42, verses 42 through 47. This is where the church was together. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And God added to their number daily those who were being saved. And here we see the very start of the New Testament church, where everybody was kind of together, sharing things together, eating together, singing hymns, praying together, rejoicing together. They had created a sense of shared community of people from all over the Western world, where there was no rich or poor, old or young, woman or man, but they were one. And as you think about and put the mindset on the feast that you're going to be going to, isn't that a little bit of the same elements that we will experience or that we look forward to experience? And maybe more than we do at any other time. And when you get to the feast, and I could say this here almost in this room too, but when you get to the feast, I want you to look to people around you. Look at who's in that room. What an unlikely gathered group of people. I mean, if somebody just walked in, they'd be like, what is this? We come from different countries. We speak different languages. We have different generations and backgrounds, different socioeconomic situations, different colors, different occupations. And in general, if you really think about it, we have almost nothing in common. Except that we have everything in common spiritually. On the things that really matter. On the reason we're there. We share a common understanding and set of values. We share the same spirit. We serve one ruler. And finally, we are all who are there, here, sojourners, desperately seeking the same country. A place where we'll live in eternity together as a true family. And that's what the model is that you're going to experience. And you can only experience it by being there. So I want to get you ready for that. Get you in a mindset for that. To take that experience. To look for it. And then to remember it daily. I encourage you to take it. Tattoo that deep into your being, what it feels like. What it feels like to have the harmony and unity and deep security of family. And write it down on paper. Write it down in your mind and in your heart. And bottle it up. Pack it in your luggage and bring it back with you. The third and final mindset that I want to talk about is that of a sojourner. And I kind of already hit on that. A sojourner, a wanderer, a foreigner. One of the most basic human needs is to feel like you belong. I work with a lot of people, and all they really want to do is belong. They just want to do something that matters. That's a basic human need. We all have it. Our identity, our individual identities, desire so strongly to know, who am I? Where do I belong? Every human asks that question deep inside their souls. And I think for so many of us, our entire lives as we wander through this life, in this world, we so often find ourselves frustrated and discouraged, disappointed, maybe even flat out depressed. Because the more we try to emulate our role model, Jesus Christ, the more we desire to walk in his ways, the more we desire to focus on the spiritual world that nobody seems to care about, the more we just feel like we don't fit in this world, that we just don't belong, that somehow this is not our home. When you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, it's really just a gathering of sojourners. You know, fellow believers who recognize that we are just passing through this temporary land and these temporary tents of our bodies, who seek a promised land that is just beyond our view. Turn to Leviticus 23. This is right at the core of the Feast of Tabernacles for when God instituted it. Leviticus 23, you know, the chapter of the festivals, the chapter of the holy days. You probably don't even need to turn there. But Leviticus 23, 41 through 43. Celebrate this festival to the Lord for 7 days each year. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. Celebrate in the seventh month. Live in temporary shelters for 7 days. All native-born Israelites are to live in such shelters. So your descendants will know that I had the Israelites live in temporary shelters when I brought them out of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. At the very beginning, as God instituted this, it was all about remembering that where they dwelt was temporary. It's symbolic of life. The tents are our bodies. You know, Israel did not belong in Egypt. It's like we don't belong in this world. Israel did not belong in Egypt. And when they left, they really did not have a home. They wandered. They didn't belong. They sought the promised land, a land that they were completely dependent on for God to provide. It was a gift, not a place that they deserved, not a place that they were owed, but a place that God, by his sheer grace and by his sheer promise, was giving to them as an inheritance. And what God, in instituting this holy day in Leviticus 23, 3,500 years ago or 3,000 years ago, whatever it was, every year God wanted his people to remember that they were wanderers, that they were sojourners, that in their hearts they seek to be with God in his presence, to admit that not belonging to this world was who they were, and that they were his people. And this is not new with the Israelites. You know, this is really the story of all who were gods throughout the entire Bible. And it's our story today. Turn to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. This is the story of fellow sojourners. Hebrews 11. Maybe one of the best, most inspirational chapters in the whole Bible. Hebrews 11, I'll read in verse 8. By faith, and Mr. Rich mentioned this, faith is the foundation. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. It's like a metaphor for everything, right? For everything that we experience. God provided an inheritance. As Mr. Rich said, Abraham had to obey. He had to follow through. He had to do something. He had to leave where he belonged. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country, like a sojourner. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city, not a tent, not temporary, permanent, city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. You know, our heritage is Abraham. Our heritage is Israel. And when I read this, I realize, you know what? I know I don't belong in this world. And I am not only okay with it, I'm excited about it. Read on in Hebrews 11, verse 13. All these people were still living by faith when they died, and they did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. Is this physical all there is? When you look at the people we want to emulate in Hebrews 11, they said, this is not my world. Physical is not all there is. I'm a foreigner. I'm a sojourner. There's another place I want to go. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country that they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And isn't this why God has us keep the feast each year? Because it's easy to forget this. When it's all around us, when it's what we start doing every day, that this physical world is passing away. This life is temporary. These bodies are shells. All the little petty things that this world around us that tells us are so important just really aren't. And by going to the feast, with the mindset of a sojourner, God reminds us. He reminds us that we are his, and that by his grace, he has prepared a promised land for us, an eternal city. That as Paul says in Romans 8, that all the struggles of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us in that day when we are home in the presence of our God with our fellow sojourners for all eternity. So that's the third mindset. Have the mindset of a sojourner and embrace it. Look at Hebrews 11 and say, I want that to be what God says about me. So as I close today, I hope you feel a little more ready. I hope you're ready to take account of your harvest this past year, to write it down and add to it and savor it. Find two people that God has blessed you with and tell them. Take that list out and pray about it while you're at the feast and eat of your harvest. Thank him each day in prayer. And in doing that, if you do that, Like I said, I guarantee you that you will go to the feast ready to rejoice with your Lord. I hope you're also ready to soak in the model of community, of harmony. A model I can tell you about all day long, but it takes being there and experiencing it to really intrinsically get it. To see that there's a spiritual world just through the relationships that you experience. Be ready for it to impress upon your heart what God is doing, that he is using relationships to teach us his most powerful spiritual lessons. And finally, I hope you're ready to have a mindset to admit that you do not belong, to admit that life is temporary, and be ready to go take a glimpse, a preview, to be able to peer a little behind the curtain, to be able to look through the glass that's a little blurry at the promised land that God is preparing for us. If you do all that, then you are ready. Ready to go before your Lord, your God, to remember why we are in tents, to focus on the harvest personally and the eventual harvest of all mankind, and to rejoice and to have pure joy before our Lord, God, and Father. I hope you all have a great Feast of Tabernacles. We won't see a Day of Atonement, so I hope you have a great time wherever you go, and I hope you are ready.